listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, September the 11th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. You know, as always, I'm very happy to be here.
I'm so glad to have you and so glad to have those in the live chat as well. We always appreciate your contributions and seeing you. Always thank you to those listening in the archives as well. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we're going to begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completedness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So tonight, we are wrapping up our little talk on history with our part 3. So last time we left off at the Renaissance. We're going to pick up there in the Enlightenment and such. A couple little housekeeping things. I would say first and foremost, we have some listeners, Wendy among them, in the path of Hurricane Francine. We're wishing you the best. Stay safe. I definitely know how those can be. Hoping that everything is going to be nice and go quick, and you guys won't have too much damage on that one. But definitely stay safe. We also have the odds of landing on September 11th, and just in an auspicious date. It was altering my life, or indeed, I mean, I was 13 when that happened, and it changed the world forever after, but remembrance on that day. And I'm a little under the weather, so we might call it a briefer broadcast tonight, so, but looking forward to getting into it, and then we have some great stuff coming next week. But, we kind of left off with the Renaissance. We kind of re-engaged as a society, as a species, with the old ideas of the old world a bit that had been squashed by those monotheistic religions, you know, Christianity, Islam, and the like. And they were kind of beginning anew. But I think, Dr. Vicki, what do you think kind of the Enlightenment is kind of really where the new learning and kind of thing takes off, wouldn't you say?
Well, you know, I had to look this up. The spiritual movement, I didn't think it started this early, but it was around the 1840s. Mm-hmm. And under the guise of wanting a new religion combined with science. How about that? Yeah. So they took two mediumship, psychics, all kinds of other, and incorporating some other philosophies. So it was an evolution of sorts, but of course it was all very underground and hush-hush. Mm-hmm. And I think that movement has pretty much stayed under the wire until about the 1970s. Because I know when I first started doing readings in the early 70s, it was still quiet. You didn't talk about it in public, you know. But then slowly a few radio shows picked up on it, pure entertainment, of course, mm-hmm. you know, interviewing people. But the spiritualist movement took a lot of flack they really had to keep an underground, so to speak. So there were pamphlets, booklets that would get passed out to, you know, expand their interest in readership and, you know, membership, so to speak. And, you know, the onset, I think when there was a really interesting divide, and certainly in my mind, this is a marked period, is Sigmund Freud. And, well, he was born in 1850s. You know, I'd have to look it up somewhere. But
late 1800s, he lived into the early 20th century.
Yes, so he actually, you know, had a really difficult time going against the religious grain also and developing psychoanalysis, and said it had nothing to do with religion. So imagine how ingrained religion was into the majority psyche. And, of course, I'm talking about the Christianized world, you know, so to speak. Now, there were other parts of the world that were not Christian that take it quite naturally to believe in the gods or supernatural or, you know, something otherworldly. So, largely what we think of in the spiritualist movement is simply Europe and North America. Well, we have to keep the rest of the globe in check as well, because there were all kinds of interests and practices. And we can talk about what goes down to pantheists or pagans to indigenous cultures. That was a norm. And that, for many indigenous cultures, continues. So there's all these varying levels. But in our main society, what, you know, we regard, the spiritualist movement was really a big turning point into the early 1900s. And, of course, I think there was the Masons had long been over here in North America. Then you had the building of the Rosicrucian Order that came over. And interesting history there, they said it would kind of go to sleep for 100 years and then revive for new members. And that was the whole premise. And the Rosicrucian Order, the ancient mystical order, the Rosicrucis, was to remain a secreted spiritual society that had apparently been around for, you know, thousands of years, apparently.
Allegedly.
Yeah, well, we don't know. And but at one time, you know, it, some, you know, very interesting names, including Walt Disney, who was a Rosicrucian, you know, following spiritual practices, the occult, of, you know, raising consciousness, so to speak. And then to quickly fast forward, this New Age movement really only started in the 70s. So it...
particular flavor, right?
You know, so it was an evolution, I guess the best way to say that, of bringing other ways, alternative ways of thinking and experiencing life. It just took a life of its own, but came to the forefront where, I'm going to tell people, even in Canada, in the Criminal Code of Canada, fortune telling is illegal to this day. So anyone who is, they can be taken to task, although rarely, unless you're extorting people for exorbitant amounts of money to remove a spell, you can still be charged for reading tarot cards.
I wonder if there's a difference in Canada than there would be in the States, because that seems almost unimaginable.
Yeah, it's never been rewritten. Nobody's ever addressed it.
Well, thinking about spiritualism and the movement, you know, it definitely had its ebbs and flows. And I think right from the mid-1800s, and it was, at least in the United States, which is what I'm more familiar with, you had a lot of different thoughts coming out. You had people breaking out. You had, you know, the freedom of religion thing. So they basically could, you know, go whichever way they felt. This is when you had groups like Jehovah's Witnesses, like the Mormons, like you had the Christian Scientists, and you have everybody kind of looking at things and trying to attack it a different way. A couple of decades later, you get into the late 1800s. Again, I think it's a totally different ball game in North America than it is in Europe. I think Europe still has a lot of the old world monarchy.
Yeah.
Even the Protestant areas still have, you know, they reject anything that's kind of the, even some, you know, some of the stuff that the Catholics brought in from the old world, they kind of reject as, you know, satanic. And then you still, of course, have the Catholics. And then you have the Islamic regions. Really, you know, anything that was in the West Eurasia was kind of dominated by this mindset. But I think, you know, think about Madame Blavatsky. Think about all of the spiritualism that occurred in the late 1800s, early 1900s. You had major figures that would go to mediums and that would, you know, engage in these kind of thoughts. And they kind of, I think it maybe went into a dimmer kind of tone as we got into the World War I, World War II, the Depression. I think that there was kind of another, you know, ebb, if you will. And then I think it picked up again, like you said, in the 70s, just from my, you know, cursory overlookings. But there's that kind of common thread, right? You know, picking up those kind of old world traditions, adding new thoughts to it, kind of combining it with the science that really kind of was becoming the predominant thing of the day in the Enlightenment through the modern age. Kind of take the old world ideas and combine it with what we kind of learning from the materialist world into something new, a fusion.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, it said that Blavatsky was the first to bring over Indian philosophies. She studied in India. She was the first to bring over and integrate a lot of Indian philosophies and religious context into, you know, the spiritualist movement in North America and in Europe. And, of course, she was highly revered for a lot of reasons, but, you know, it was that, I think, world travel has a lot to do with it also, and people experiencing other cultures and saying, oh,
yeah, absolutely,
there's an idea. Again, you're building an idea on what you already believe. You know, it's very hard to, especially during those days, to say, oh, I have to reroute my software because, you know, those old programs don't work anymore. So you can't. Yeah. So religion and the notion of the light of Christ and the Christ love still remained kind of that touchstone, if you will, of the spiritualist movement. So they were integrating that into trying to explore what else.
You know,
so it's fascinating that when you're learning new things, you want to pile it onto what you already believe.
Well, you almost have to, right? We've talked about it in other aspects where, you know, we only see what we believe, you know, so we see things through the prism of, you know, where our mind already is. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I know that, I always thought that she spent most of her time after emigrating from Russia in New York, like the New York area. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there it is. She actually died in 1891 in London.
Mm-hmm.
So she was definitely a traveler, and I think it was that, you're right, you know, you have the North American classic WASP, right, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. They had never heard of these Eastern Slavic ideas, and I think it was very interesting, and of course it's that fusion, right? And, you know, when you were talking just a moment, I had just a thought of analogy where voodoo practices come from what I've kind of cursory readings have said, that it was the kind of old African, and Africa is a huge place with many diverse different belief systems and cultures, but at least some of them combined into the, you know, they were obviously sent over to the West Indies or the Caribbean as slaves, and they were forced into, you know, Catholicism at the time under the Spanish and the French, at least in this strain of voodoo that kind of pops up in Louisiana and throughout the islands. But it's that fusion of the old world thinking and this new European ideas too, and they kind of fuse it into something new that's different from both of the predecessors. And I think it's that constant cycle of fusion, of getting new ideas and fusing it with the old and finding out what works and, you know, what's pushing the envelope forward.
By the way, Dr. Mike has written something in the chat for people who are interested. It's his understanding that the Rosicrucians were first introduced to the public through three influential manifestos, and it was started in 1614. The Fama Fraternitas, the Confessio Fraternitas. I can't say that, Michael.
That's Latin. It's a dead language. Yeah. Who cares?
And then the Chemical Wedding of Christian Rosenkreuz. And I think that it was in that period, the 1600s, that it never went to sleep again, if mm-hmm. I have this right. Because I was a member of the order for a few years back in the, late 70s. So I learned a lot. But again, it has its rigidities also. But I'll tell you, there's some fabulous writing, fabulous philosophies and ideas, and the education is, quite invaluable. But yeah, thanks for that, Dr. Mike. It's a bit of, again, when we look at history, what is there and what is missing? And, we get bits of it, and then we look it up on Google, and that's not always accurate, as I've said before.
Yeah,
so
Google's, yeah, right. It's only as good as the source material, right?
Yeah. So, but that's, I appreciate Dr. Mike throwing that in there.
A good addition.
So here we are, in the 21st century, and metaphysics in many circles still is not, it's considered hocus pocus, right? Nonsensical. But if some people realized how serious the government has taken it in the past, that we can write from, government studies on remote viewing. I think it was. Well, let me tell you, when my late teacher Frank was studying psychology back in the 50s and early 60s, parapsychology was a natural part of it. It was still the study of the human mind, the human experience, and then one day they quit. All universities quit, and it moved to, there's two universities in the U.S., and that's my brain tonight, Michael, that still have a department under the guise of something else that still study paranormal parapsychology. Mm-hmm. And the Jet Propulsion Lab has done an enormous amount of research. But the government, remote viewing, psychic phenomenon, it's considered, valid enough to pursue, to study, and be used. So it's just in the mainstream, and again, depending on what mindset you're at, and how much you're educated about these things, and you don't know. So,
and absolutely, I think it's a very complicated history, and it is one that has been fraught with all kinds of different it's been frowned on by large elements of society. Although you have to say that, looking at the modern world right now with what we have with interconnectedness, communications, the ability to share ideas, you have to say these things are, really accepted in a way today that they, I don't think, have been in maybe centuries. I know that, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, at least in North America and probably the Western, cities, especially, maybe not the rural areas, but cities, a lot of these different ideas were, quite the popular thing in the upper elites. But I think, in the masses right now, it seems like it's spread like it never has, at least since the old days. And, just thinking about the scale of it in terms of how long it's been around is just the blink of an eye. Mm-hmm. Even the, I can't remember the coin name. Rosicrucian.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rosicrucians. Since the 1600s, nothing. I mean, the Egyptians had 4,000 years where they had their pantheon of gods and their
religion. Well, that's where the Rosicrucian principles come from, Michael.
Well, then there you go. It's still, even the Egyptians changed their gods and swapped them out and had different lead gods, and they constantly had change. And I guess one of the current constant things is change. like, you know, it's that weird combination of the more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, we have these ancient ideas, but in it with new flavors and new ways of looking at them.
You know, we would be totally remiss to not mention Adolf Hitler and his love affair with mysticism.
Yeah.
And what lengths he went to, you know, anything mystical and magical. In fact, when you take that Z in the swastika, it's actually an ancient sign for the sun and its solar energy. And if you swirl it, it makes energy move. Put it backwards, it's a different thing. So he had a double solar sign giving, and it's sad because the swastika gave it a really bad name. It's still a symbol used in many cultures. They now have to kind of semi-conceal it into, you know, what we call bind runes mixed with other things. But that's what he did. He studied all the runic symbols. He studied all kinds. Like, the guy went to great lengths. And of course, as we all know here, you know, the story is that he also had an alien ship that was trying to reverse engineer it. And so this is, again, what, you know, what's kept secreted versus what the general public has been allowed. And now, of course, we take a lot of things. Well, of course, haven't you guys always been able to look at that stuff?
Well, it's because we live in a society in the modern era that's more free with information than any time other in human history. You know, because we have more access to information. And, you know, when you say what's allowed, well, literally everything is allowed. And there are very few, at least, you know, in the United States. I know Europe has some restrictions they put on things, and maybe Canada as well. But you can look into anything. It's there is constant rabbit holes to go through. And how do you pick out one of the grounded ideas from the not? You know, it's unfortunate that Hitler and the Nazi movement, you know, captured that. It's a very, you know, primal symbol. There's a balance to it, but it's been made to associate with the most evil aspects of humanity because of our 20th century reference point, which is another good thing. Reference point makes so much of a difference.
You know, Dr. Mike, sat it in here, everybody. Thank you, Dr. Mike. I love your contributions. Key beliefs and themes of Rosicrucians are the search for hidden knowledge. Yep. Alchemy, big one. Harmony with nature and Christian mysticism. Now, I think there was a shift, my understanding, because a lot of their symbolism is Egyptian and kind of Middle Eastern symbols in there. And so they kind of, you know, I think folks do what folks do, and they took on the Christian ilk of it. And again, in search of the Christ light, you know, to be one with Christ, to be, how do you reach that state of consciousness to be pure? At least that's, you know, that's the idea. You know, some of us can have other thoughts about that. But, you know, again, everyone with their interpretation. But the search for hidden knowledge, absolutely, alchemy is huge. That's another fascinating topic we should talk about sometime.
Yeah, well, the history there, huh? Yeah, kind of going into chemistry.
Yeah, thanks everybody for the chat. Boy, anybody listening in the archives, we have some really interesting discussions going on in the chat.
Yeah, we
that,
do.
You know, we can't possibly get to everybody in there. Everything from, you know.
You know, and let's shout out to Dr. Zoran, letting us know about Serbian traditions from the 13th century when they were talking about the blending of Christianity with the local different ideas. You know, the house protection ghost he had mentioned, everyone has a protection saint, and it's hard to keep up with the chat, especially when you kind of get going on a tangent. You're thinking to yourself, not really reading.
But I know. It is good stuff. I think that the point of us having this little series is to remind ourselves and educate ourselves that metaphysics has always been around. It's just for those who have an interest in that history, it's, we just cover the surface, Michael.
Absolutely.
In a short amount of time, it's the surface of it. And where we are today, you know, some people still don't want to. Like, I'm, as everybody knows, I'm staying with a friend right now. And in this particular town, it's only 10,000 people, but she's lived here in this town for a year, and said she's yet to meet anybody who's into metaphysics or spirituality. She said, it's not that I won't, but she said, you can go to that town and that town and that town, lots of it. Here, no. And I said, what I know about people is that they're quiet about it.
Oh, for sure. You would know better than I, but I've always had the impression it's a bit of a crapshoot where with small rural areas, it's either there's a ton of it or there's like none of it. It's underground. And where the cities, it's kind of can be a mix, and you can always find an area of a city that, you know, where it's kind of thriving.
You know, and last week I got a message from a very long time client, like over 20 years, and he's a Lutheran minister. And about twice a year, he calls for a reading. So, you know, so, yeah. I mean, he's not going to tell his congregation that.
Oh, sure.
But it's so I have known lots of people who come to me, like Christians, Muslims,
We can be lost you. Christians, Muslims, and we lost you. You were saying Christians and Muslims, and then you cut off.
And Hindus, I've had all kinds of religions come to me secreted, you know, because they find it fascinating, interesting. They would like to know something, you know, and like a bit of reassurance. And it's so,
you know,
they all believe in spirits and want to know what happens to you when you die and connect with a loved one or something.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's about hope, right? And it's about trying to figure out this weird, chaotic mess that we, at least it appears a lot of times to us. Yeah. Of course, a lot of people will say that, you know, order and chaos are two sides of the same coin. But, you know, I just, you know, thinking about this, you're talking about all these different things. I got into a real tangent going into different Eastern, well, you know, like Middle Eastern ideas where the fusion of Islam and Zoroastrianism and all the ancient stuff. I really have always, you know, really gotten into the Persians, loved those, Big Cyrus, the great man. But, you know, it's so interesting. And the jinn, you know, like kind of these weird, you know, demons. I think the genie from Aladdin was supposed to be one of those. But all these different, just so many, you know, and throughout the world, there's such a diversity of ideas and thoughts about the spiritual and the metaphysical and what is reality and what is existence? Why are we here? What are we here for? What is this? Mm. And, you know, it's been tackled by so many. It is one of the better pursuits of humanity, considering all the competition that it gets. You know. But leading right up into today, so, you know, we talked about all these different fusions of movements and things, which kind of leads us right up into metaphysical humanism. You know, a fusion of metaphysical ideas and secular humanism. Mm. And trying to look at life through a more, I know we all have our bias in some ways. I was going to say unbiased way, but, you know, trying to look at what is reality? Can we see reality? Can we see what the truth is? Or at least, you know, maybe truth is a tough word. Is it all subjective?
Yeah.
But, you know, we're just trying to tackle this thing called life using all the tools that we have. And that's what we're here to do.
Yep.
And we have some set principles. You know, we have the nine principles. We have the school. We have the coursework that many of you have been through, and encourage you to continue on that. But it is just part of that tool set to try to understand this world around us. And that's why I love history, because you can look back at the people that came before and the ideas that came before, and can you really understand what we're dealing with now without figuring out how we kind of got here as best we can? So much gets lost to the myths of history. So much that we're talking about is we're relying on the fact that people said it so. And that's always a little iffy for me, because, hey, listen, I think that there's a lot of credible stuff that comes from oral history, but also the entire reason that Christians and all monotheistic religions, or any religion really, says that, why should you believe what we say? Because we say it so. Because we say that Jesus Christ was the Messiah. We say that Allah was God's prophet, or Muhammad, excuse me, was God's prophet, etc. So we're a little bit is being taken on the fact that we have to decide what are we going to believe and what we're not. You know, what kind of fits into.
Well, I think we also have to remind ourselves, Michael, that we're very fortunate to live in a place on the planet that we don't go to jail for certain things that we think.
Oh, hallelujah, right?
Yeah. So
absolutely.
That gratitude thing. I think it's time,
It is.
We're going to take a few names tonight. As we said, we're going to try to cut this evening a little bit shorter.
And, well, just read fast. But yeah, throw them in.
If anyone would like an inner oracle self-discovery card backed up with a tarot card, put your name in the chat and we'll do our best.
Yeah, absolutely. So while we're getting some names coming in, a little bit of housekeeping as well. Next week, very excited, we're going to have Dr. Rick Dileska back with us.
Yes.
We're going to be talking about AI and the singularity, which we have touched on with him before in different discussions, but not focused on. So we're really going to dial into artificial intelligence. We're really going to dial into what is the singularity, this idea where computer technology could meet with the consciousness of a human mind, which I know is going to be... I think you and I kind of take different sides on that idea of what, you know, can you have machine intelligence on par with humanity? But good stuff. It's going to be good stuff. So we got some names coming up.
Well, Danelle, she's funny. She goes, hello, Auntie. Hello, Danelle and Jeremy. So let's see what we've got for Danelle, shall we?
All right. Absolutely. And Danelle, starting with you, I have number 9, empowerment. Taking your power back is literally all-powerful and absolutely priceless. It alone is the solution in principle for virtually every problematic circumstance in your life, from a bad relationship to spiritual harassment. Retaining your power means to retain your wholeness. When you are whole, you are empowered. Empower others by doing no harm and doing right. Sharing the best of yourself is encouraging and uplifting to yourself and others.
Well, I got fairness and equitability. It's the justice card, really. Fairness and, you know, empowerment is being able to, that, as Michael just said, that give and take. It's that when individuals empower themselves but manage to share with each other, then it's two big, strong, you know, energies together. And that's what justice is. Where's the fairness? Where's the equitability? Where's the sharing? And empowering each other when you're empowered yourself, I mean, that goes a long way. So I would say in this case, Danelle, it might be a little shift of thinking, a little more understanding and patience. And it could be something outside your relationship with Jeremy as well that you're looking at. Just trying to understand what's fair. Now, if you don't think it's fair, sometimes we have to let go. You know, you have to pick and choose. So Hope that makes sense, Jeremy or Danelle. So I guess we have Jeremy up.
We do. And I'm going to stifle a sneeze while I read, so right. Apologies if I pause. Mm-hmm. All right. I have number 40, relationships. Healthy relationships are interdependent and win-win. They are not dependent or codependent. Accept others for who they are and not for what they believe. Don't be judgmental. Otherwise.
All right.
Excuse me. Otherwise, and the relationship, regardless of who it is with, healthy relationships, we must add more than we subtract. This card can refer to a healthy or toxic relationship or of the relationship of one thing to another. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's it's okay, Michael. We get it. Danelle and Jeremy have kind of a vibe going on here. With relationships, I got the 7 of Diamonds, which really is about harvest. It's looking at the good, the gratitude, the benefits and the rewards of, you know, what you both bring to. Are you better people for being together? Is your life better for being together? So it's really important, I think, to, even in the little things, make sure that you still keep that big picture in mind. And so, and you would also be looking at value for value, Jeremy, in your exchange with other people, not just with Danelle. So value for value. You know, it's got to go both ways. So hope that makes sense.
Absolutely.
To you guys.
All right, Damien. Thank you, by the way, for all your contributions to the chat. It's been good stuff.
Yeah.
For you, I have number 3, be who you are, walk your own path. You are a uniquely designed, one-of-a-kind universal being, equally entitled to all good things, the same as others. Drawing this card encourages you to be who you are and to walk your own path, not comparing yourself with others. Give yourself permission to accept who and what you are. move forward in the direction you need to take that best fulfills yourself.
Now, if I had this right, you're Damien, right? That's for Damien?
Yeah, you got
it. Yeah, okay. I had a glitch in my audio. The Five of Hearts. Now, for what Michael has just said to you, I'm going to back that up with taking inventory. So, why do I feel like this is kind of familiar for you, Damien? It's being true to yourself, but that Five of Hearts is taking inventory. What do you have? What do you not need anymore? What is kind of no longer required? You have skills, but you don't need them today. So you don't have to keep building on previously gained skills and think that's your focus. You have new skills. Anytime you need the old skills, they're there. But it's also about now moving forward. How do you want to move forward? And I would say there's a revising or revamping in mind, and which you feel is more in keeping with your vibe now, like the new Damien. So, well, good for you. I think that's a great message.
All right. And we have Audra next. And for you, I have number 45, inspiration and motivation. Inspiration and motivation come from hope. Motivation means finding a meaningful reason to do something. Look within for inspiration leading to motivation by reflecting on your goals and the life you want to live. Drive and accomplishment may be missing from your life, or your life may revolve too heavily around it. Remain balanced, inspired, and motivated with the vigor of positive energy.
Well, I'm going to pick two cards here for you, Audrey, because, yeah, okay. I got the Nine of Spades, which is, somebody could have disappointed you. Things didn't go quite the way you were promised. And I think it has to do with some kind of dependency or expectation that somebody was to meet. But the second card, I said, well, okay, what's that about? Well, you got the Two of Clubs. And I think it's a bit of a learning curve in it could be something at work, you know, quite simply as that. And having to be patient, give directives. And I don't feel like this is something you should cut off altogether. I just think someone is on a learning curve, and you're the one to step up. Boy, I'm going out on a limb there again, Michael. But that's what I think that means. So it's looking beyond this moment of being disappointed. So inspiration, motivation, that's the whole point, too. Got to look at how they're paired up.
Good combo. Mm.
All right. Now, we got Jeff next, but before we...
I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, I have to announce this because I have a big mouth sometimes. Dr. Jeff and Shauna are getting married early October. Oh. Congratulations. I got a message from Jeff today. Thank you for the invitation. But yeah, I'm kind of like a little sidetracked in my life right now. And so I wish them all the best. Oh, my God, they're such a wonderful couple. So that's just telling everybody that there's bells in the air.
Well, hearty congratulations to you both. That is wonderful news, and I'm very glad that you threw that out.
So what have you got for Jeff?
Well, for Jeff, I have for you... And a dog next to me making noise. I have for you preference over principle. Mark of knowledge and wisdom is knowing when and how to offer an opinion or voice a complaint. If it's a matter of preference, yield. If it's a matter of principle, policy, or law, stand firm. It's important to know when and where to pick your battles. Be selective regarding the areas in which you invest your energy.
All right. It could be something... just overcoming a small obstacle here, Jeff, with the Five of Spades. It's usually that goes better than you expect, like the difficulty is over, the hard work is over kind of thing. But I also get a sense with preference and principle that there's a couple of decisions you might be waffling about, which is not the marriage. Couple of obstacles that you're trying to overcome in a way. You'll get through it just fine. Sometimes small little curveballs get thrown our way. Yeah, you know, never. I don't know. I'm hearing chatter in the background. It's like other people, some people might not agree with your decisions, or you just have to never mind. So pick your battles. Say, move on, move forward, be happy.
Good stuff. Love it. Love everything about it. I think we have Dr. Edward next.
All right.
And for you, I have number 44, attitude or disposition. Enthusiasm or an agreeable disposition, along with good manners, assures individual happiness that inevitably influences others. Drawing this card may indicate a time to review a change in attitude regarding someone or something in your life. Be positive. This can be positive or negative. Be proactive and ask yourself, how hard can it be? A can-do attitude makes it happen.
I got strength. I love that, Edward. It's the will. Determination. And I feel like you might have had you know, when you get life breathed into you again, Michael, when you say it's a new kind of enthusiasm or anticipation about something. Attitude, disposition, strength. You might be feeling better physically, or you have something optimistic to look forward to. But I think it's a really hopeful kind of message to you, Edward, that it's like opening up a new day in a way. Saying, oh, this is really good. So, hope that makes sense.
Good stuff.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to say, too, Dr. Zach, who's not with us tonight, he and Alex just celebrated 18 years together.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. You know, I remember, was it today that the anniversary is?
Or it was
right around, anyway. I saw something on that. But, yeah, that is fantastic news. You love to see it.
I love the happy stories.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and that's what the goal is in life. You know, we're all trying to figure out, you know, what are we here for? I think we're here to, you know, enjoy ourselves, find out what, you know, some of the deeper messages are. But Dr. Jeff, like you, Dr. Zach, if you're listening to this later, like you and Alex, it is to experience life with the people that you love.
Yeah.
So, but, all right. And we have Dr. Zorin next.
Oh, all right.
And thank you for being with us. And also, again, thank you for your contributions in chat, too. I love the kind of you bring the perspective from Serbia. I love reading your contributions. It's just a whole new perspective. And thank you for that. And thank you for staying up so late to be with us.
He sure is.
I have for you number 29, pay it forward. Living with gratitude and responsibility extends generosity to others. Even with random acts of kindness that offer no self-benefit except the satisfaction of heartfelt kindness. This may be a time to calm the spirit and lift the heart by giving forward without any particular reason, reminding yourself that love is the center of all life. Is there a way you can pay it forward right now?
Wow, got the King of Hearts there for you, Zoran. I think with Pay It Forward and King of Hearts is an opportunity for you. And it's like, you're thinking about it, but there's an opportunity here for you to volunteer something, offer something that makes a world of difference, but not just to one, many. Wow. That was profound, Michael. I just had this feeling. So, Zoran, I think that you're given a real feel-good opportunity here to help some folks, and you know, that always comes back tenfold. So it's, I don't know if you're doing something in your community, for your family, but just know that with the King of Hearts, it comes from your hearts, but you are appreciated. It's like, comes in the nick of time. So that's awesome.
All right. I think I saw, can you hear me?
Yeah,
okay?
I hear you.
Oh, that might sound cut out on my side. Anywho, I think we have a friend of Danelle, Renee, is throwing her name in.
Oh, I didn't see. Okay.
So we'll go through that real quick. Renee, for you, I have number 30, greatness to deliver. If you pulled a card, if I made a mistake, I'm sorry, you're getting one anyway. Every human being is born with greatness to deliver. Greatness embodies unique self-actualization and self-completedness and does not settle for mediocrity. Greatness goes above and beyond what is common and aspires to nobility of character. Greatness is being part of the solution, not part of the problem. Remind yourself with a question, what do I need to reawaken in me in order to deliver my greatness? Remember, you are valued. Delivering your greatness is making a difference in the world.
Well, I get temperance with that, Renee. You know, sometimes when we have a revelation, realization, and there's something else that we want to do, or you feel like it's not quite coming together for you, you have to be patient. Temperance is like water. Sometimes you have to go with the flow and know that every step that you're taking right now is leading you to where you want to be and more into the flow of your life. So I'd say that you're capable of way more, and you know that, and the doing or wanting of more, but it's just the one step at a time. And of course, there's always making decisions along the way, isn't there, Michael? So it's that flow of life. And so give yourself a break. Be patient. Don't make any rash decisions, but rather wait for that little voice, you know, to speak to you and say, okay, it's time. So I hope that makes sense to you, Renee. All right. How are we doing, Michael? Are you muted, or do I have you?
I was muted.
I knew it.
Well, my nose, and I muted myself.
I knew it. All right.
We have, by my count, we have Dr. Kevin as our last poll.
Okay. I have not been keeping up here.
He has said that he might not be able to join us next week, so we're going to get you one for tonight. Mm. Hey, this is one that I feel like we pulled a good bit. And I think we might have lost Wendy. I haven't seen her throwing in a name in chat or ask for a card. I know she's got that storm Maryland down on her, so we're hoping she's doing okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, she had mentioned Doug. Anyway, moving on. Dr. Kevin, sorry for being all over the place. You have wild card number 6, entropy. Within the circle of life, there are useful energies, or low entropy, that can wane to uselessness, or high entropy. Their energy stands still, and their entropy increases. They no longer give value to the evolution of life. This can include an attitude or behavior that requires adjustment to once again take a new step in renewal and rebirth, thus lowering one's entropy. When one seeks to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem, that one lowers their personal entropy, and the world is a better place.
Well, I got the Page of Cups here, Kevin. And keeping your energy balanced and speaking in a good way and keeping conversations light. I guess what I'm saying is don't let others throw your energy off where it gets into heavy discussions, understanding where other people are at. So sometimes conversations are just limited with people, you know. I know that there's some people I can only talk about baking muffins with, and that's just got to be fine. There's a value for everyone. Everyone mm-hmm. has a value. So I guess what I want to say to you, Kevin, is watching your own energy output, watching to make sure that your energy stays level, and especially in matters of communicating. So in your adventure over the next week, be perceptive, knowing where other people are at, and just staying cool. That's what I want to say. I do want to wish Dr. Edward, thanks for that feedback. He's having an eye surgery, and he'll be able to see fine. He's very excited, so there's lots of reason for hope there. I have every bit of confidence that, you know, you're going to do very well.
Oh, good call out. I missed that. Yeah, absolutely. Second that. The most eloquent thing I can think to say right now is ditto. I agree with everything Dr. Mickey said.
Awesome.
Wishing you the very best.
Well, and again, we wish Wendy, hang in there in a hurricane.
Yeah, she's still with us, so hang in there. You know, keep that power going. You know,
keep the pig in with the dogs, and it's all good.
And, yeah, just keep your head down, wishing the best for your son. Yeah. I know he's in a bit more of a dangerous spot. You know, just our thoughts are going to be with you.
Yeah.
So. But it is that time of the evening. And Dr. Vicky, thank you for being here with me. I couldn't do it without you. literally, we could not do this without you. And I appreciate you. Appreciate everybody that's been joining us. And as we wrap up, any last thoughts?
Yeah. Don't let them push you around out there. It's all good, everybody. Just keep your head up.
Good advice. Thank you, everybody. Until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.